Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, however you choose to identify, welcome to Biscuits, colon, a hockey podcast, episode 41, maybe? 42? Do you know what episode we're on, Sean?
I don't, no. We're in our early 40s. Trust me, you get to the early 40s, you lose track.
Yeah, like the years don't matter anymore. It's just...
Yeah, it's just 40-ish.
The years start coming and they don't stop coming, you know, to the rules and you hit the ground running. Did it make sense not to live for fun? Your brain gets smart, but your head gets dumb. I'm Dave Lozo.
That was profound.
Yeah, the Dallas Stars ruined me with that Smash Mouth night they had at the arena. That was devastating to my mind, even though I wasn't even there. Did you see that?
I didn't. Was this like, Did they take you up on your theme music night?
Well, yeah, they didn't steal my idea or anything. Apparently, they've done this before. But yeah, they when they play Nashville, apparently, that guy whose name I don't know, I want to say something Gruber, his name's like Tweet Grubes on Twitter, decided to play Smash Mouth's All-Star at every single stoppage during the game against Nashville. And I couldn't figure out why. I couldn't figure out why they were trolling Nashville or if they were even trolling their own fans. But Nashville, Smashville, Smash Mouth, that was the bit. And apparently it was well received.
Wow. That seems like a long way to go to troll like 20 hockey players. But you're also trolling your own 20 plus like 18,000 fans.
Like you're in the building and you're like, this is pretty funny. And then like the next whistle, they did it again. Next whistle. Is it possible the DJ died and he just collapsed on the CD player?
Face first, right on the button.
It's constantly playing, but like somehow it turns off when the puck drops. Like, all right. So 2.5 hours of Smash Mouth's, hey, now you're an all-star, get your game on. Go play.
How'd the game turn out? Do we know?
I believe Dallas won in a shootout. And then after the game.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So they got like extra Smash Mouth.
I think they played it during every single Nashville Predators attempt. They just like now shooting Philip Forsberg. Hey, now you're an all-star. Get your game on. Go. And then they just couldn't possibly compete with that. That was a win. I think the DJ earned the Dallas Stars a point that night.
Wow.
Yeah, that was the game before Christmas. And as you know, as I know, we get to enjoy 3 days off because there is no hockey between the 24th and the 26th. But there's other sports. There's the NBA. The NBA kind of owns Christmas. The way the football schedule fell this year, there's NFL games. There's two of them. I don't think either one was really that good, if I remember correctly. I was out of it because of fantasy football, so I didn't care anymore. But there's no hockey. How do you... Personally, I like not having to go cover games. I don't want to see like my friends in hockey have to go cover games, but I do understand that maybe part of the reason why the NFL and the NBA do so well is they put their players out there when there's a captive audience and people can't go anywhere and they watch the sport, and hockey doesn't do that. And I don't know. I can in this journalistic age where we got to hear both sides on everything, I can kind of hear both sides on this argument.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like it would suck to have to go and cover.
Yeah.
Like, especially if you're like a beat guy and you got to go on the road.
Yeah.
But that's a few dozen people. I don't think, you know, the typical fan really
no one cares
very much about that. But yeah, there's a part of me that says, yeah, get a couple of games on Christmas Day. I'd stay away from Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve is when most people, I think, do stuff. That's when most of my Christmas Eve stuff happens. So
yeah, exactly. Like Christmas Eve is that even if you don't have anything going on, you kind of feel like you should be, I don't know, doing something other than sitting and watching TV. Whereas like Christmas Day is that kind of, okay, let's find something that we can all kind of sit around and just veg out and watch. And I mean, the problem the NHL would have is that they would get absolutely crushed by the NBA in the ratings in the US. It would just, I don't follow the NBA all that much, but my understanding is like, doesn't the NBA kind of put its real big time marquee games on in the afternoon and then they keep going into the evening? But
I don't know. I mean, it was Sixers Knicks to start the day, and that game was decent to the last like 2 or 3 minutes. But then the Warriors played the Cavs in the next game, and I don't remember what else happened that day. I don't know if that's like a strategic thing, like maybe if the best game sometimes is at 8 or maybe it's not. I don't know. But
knew, like sometimes you don't necessarily know what games are going to be the best ones, but everybody would have known Cavs and Warriors was your marquee game that you could do. And I think they put that one at like 3 o'clock. So
would the compromise be like Montreal, Toronto? If you feel like America's never going to cut through the NBA, would you just do like a Montreal, Toronto game or something?
Like I feel like you could do an American game in the evening, like as counter programming or whatever. I don't think you want to necessarily try to make it a marquee thing because you'll just get stomped.
Yeah.
But, you know, throw one out there, some Canadian. In Canada, it's kind of weird because we, like, our thing over the holidays is, and we'll talk about this in a bit, but it's the World Juniors, right? Like, which starts on Boxing Day. And so that's kind of our, like, everybody gather around the TV and watch hockey holiday tradition. And I guess the NHL maybe would make the point that they have bailed on Christmas, but they have to some extent kind of taken ownership of New Year's Day with the Winter Classic.
Yeah, I mean, which they still get crushed by college football, though. You know,
but at least and if the NFL, you know, if the Sunday falls on January 1st, the NHL doesn't even try. They just bail and do it on the 2nd. So, but, you know, that's kind of their sort of tentpole winter holiday thing. So, I don't know, maybe it works out okay. I mean, there's part of me, like the fan part of me wouldn't mind having a game to watch. The writer part of me is perfectly content to...
Yeah.
To get a few days off, but I could see why fans, and you know, it's probably also not bad for marketing, bro, right? You wake up Christmas morning, oh, look at this, I got an envelope from Santa, oh, we got tickets to the big
there you go, it's another good point too.
Whoever game, and you know, that's good, you know, little Johnny is going to the game tonight.
But, I don't know, I think I would be for it, as bad as it would be for me potentially and other people. Just I don't know. I heard JJ Redick complaining after the Sixers game about how he hates having to play on Christmas. He said, like, the quote was something like, "And for the 10th year in a row, I just want to state that it's unfair that we have to play on Christmas. So I want to spend Christmas with my family." And I so loathe the people that say things like, when a player, you know, loses or whatever, "Oh yeah, why don't you go cry into your, you know, $52 million?" Like, yeah, but it's more than that. But at the same time, like, JJ, man, like you do make like $20 million a year. Like, there are people that work on Christmas besides athletes. Like, there's, you know, the waiters, service industry, airlines, travel people. Like, people have to work. Like, it's not like the entire world shuts down on Christmas. Like, you have to work on Christmas. It sucks, but you don't have to work on Christmas Eve.
Nobody's gonna have sympathy for the players, because I know, because they don't have. Like, I remember a few years ago. Remember when Ron Wilson announced his contract extension?
Yes,
on Christmas morning. And several people in the Toronto media sort of complained because it was a sort of, I guess the deal had been done for a while and he just chose to do it on Christmas. And they're like, oh, you know, people are literally getting phone calls on Christmas Day saying, you got to go down to the rink and cover this story rather than be with your family. And
that's fucked up.
And I know some people, and I think that was a valid complaint, but there was like no sympathy. Like, people were just Like, yeah. No, we have no time for sympathy for media guys missing out on family time. So I'm pretty sure they're not. I mean, people like hockey players a lot more than they like hockey media, but the sympathy to like a multi-million dollar hockey player who has to be away for Christmas every now and then. I mean, it would be tough on the Blackhawks because they would have to play every single year.
Of course.
Multiple times on Christmas, right? Like once Christmas Eve, Christmas morning, and then again, Christmas night, it would just be Blackhawk games.
The third game would be Blackhawks versus Ice Hogs, just in a charity event that they would do somewhere in Illinois. Maybe at Soldier Field, and they would just raise money for like the Salvation Army or some sort of Christmassy charity. And Jonathan Toews would be like, this is a really special day. You know, it's a really good chance to get out here and be with family and friends at the rink. It's
pretty and the NHL would be like, let's do a whole Christmas theme marketing campaign around Patrick Kane. Delicious. And like Duncan Keith's like, you guys sure you don't want to maybe somebody else on this team could be Martin? And they're like, no.
Brent Seabrook's been here for a while. No, nothing. All right.
All in on Patrick Kane as the face of
Ho, ho, ho. Welcome to Christmas hockey. And he's in a Santa suit. I want to tell the boys and girls and mommies and daddies all over. No. Stop it. Stop it.
No, you don't. And I do like every Patrick Kane ad, how he like he kind of like has he's like 80% into it. But you can tell there's like 20% of him that even he realizes that they shouldn't be doing this. And like
he just keeps showing up and he's like, they're eventually going to know to not do this anymore. All right, we're rolling. All right, I'll do it again. Fine, go to nhl.com and make sure you pick up all the latest toys and gifts for your family. I'm Patrick Kane and I'm not a good person. You know who's a good person, Sean, is Christopher Letang, as Pierre Maguire calls him, or Chris as the rest of the world calls him. And apparently this is breaking news to me on the way over here, because much the way you weren't aware of the huge news of the Dallas Stars playing Smash Mouth for 2.5 hours, I was unaware of this, you know, smaller story about the Penguins potentially trading Chris Letang to solve their problems. Why? Yes. Why would they do that?
Why would they do that? Well, I mean, this and we don't want to oversell it. This is just a rumor that's been going around that Chris Letang could potentially.
It's definitely going to happen.
Be on the block.
It's guaranteed.
Guaranteed to happen.
He's gone. He's gone already.
I don't know where. The idea here is that obviously Penguins have won 2 straight Stanley Cups, but this year, just for whatever reason, like they're not gaining any traction. Like I think we all through the first month, even 2 months, were kind of like, yeah, but it's the Penguins. They're a veteran team. They figured out how to kind of bide their time, but we're into almost January and they're still, kind of on the fringe of the wild card race. And I think Jim Rutherford understands that this, you know, we've seen this happen to teams. You know, we saw last year with the Lightning. We've seen it happen to other teams where good teams just have those years where it just never clicks together. And next thing you know, you've missed the playoffs. And I think he correctly figures that windows to win championships in the NHL can be short, and he should be maximizing every chance he gets with this Crosby Malkin core. And so the question becomes, what do you do? How do you shake this up and turn it around? And in recent years,
you trade one of the 5 or 10 best defensemen in hockey for 2 forwards. That's the plan. Yeah.
I mean, that's, he's made a bunch of like fringe moves. He's made he made a couple of trades right before Michael the holiday
Layton.
Freeze.
How dare you insult Michael Layton by calling him a fringe player, my friend? That's Michael Layton. Show some respect.
That is Stanley Cup finalist.
Michael Layton.
So he's done that. The last few times they've been in this situation in Pittsburgh, they fired the coach, and it's worked both times. They fired the coach mid-season and then go on and win the Stanley Cup. But you can't possibly even start down that road with a guy who's got 2 rings in 2 years. So then it comes down to, do you make a bigger trade? And who, obviously you're never going to move Crosby. You're not going to move Malkin. Kessel maybe be a guy you could move, but part of your problem is you don't have enough kind of up front in the top 6, top 9 forwards.
He's your leading scorer.
So it's, exactly. And as we've seen what he's done in the playoffs the last 2 years. So I don't know how you necessarily make that move. So it by default, it kind of ends up being Chris Letang, the guy who, A, you could presumably get a lot for, and B, you've at least seen that you can win a Stanley Cup without the guy, because they did it last year in the playoff run. And I mean, we always hear about how there's just no, you how many teams say that they need that workhorse, clear-cut number one defenseman, but we always hear about how you just can't get those guys. You either have one that you drafted and developed, or you're stuck because those guys never get traded. Here's a guy that in theory might get traded, and you know, who's lining up to get him? How much can you get for him? Who's going to, who's going to make the big move if he was available? Or do you look at it through the other lens and say, here's a guy who's been through his career, lots of injuries, medical situations.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a $7+ million cap hit for the next, I think 3 or 4 more years after this. Is this a guy that you talk yourself out of very quickly if you're a team that's looking to add a defenseman potentially?
Well, what do you think they would have to get for it to make sense for the Penguins? They probably need either a really good top six winger or like a center who is normally a top six center that they can put on a third line, plus like a top four defenseman to replace Letang in some way. That's a lot. Like, who has
that? The rumor that was out there was that they'd be looking for two top six or top nine forwards.
Oh, they wouldn't. They wouldn't even want
maybe a center or wing.
Not even a defenseman.
You're right.
Back?
You assume they would want a defenseman back, but again, you know, they did it last year without him.
What if they traded for Ekman, Larson, and like one like youngish Coyotes forward who's about to get like a raise in arbitration or because he's going to be qualified and he's no longer on the entry level deal? Like, what about one of those?
Like, I think Ekman Larson would have higher trade value than Chris Letang.
Really?
On his own. Like, I don't think you do that trade.
Well, Ekman Larson's a UFA after this year, right? Or next year. I always forget.
After next year. He's in that Crossen Doughty.
Yeah, no, then forget it. Yeah, I thought he was a UFA after this year, like a rental. Then you get plus him and a forward, but no, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, that's a hard man. Like, if you're the Penguins and you're making that trade and you want to get better, it feels like the Penguins are like a married couple and their things are going bad. They're not getting along. The marriage is a disaster, and their idea to fix it is to have a kid. Like, that's gonna solve everything for the Penguins, is getting rid of Chris Letang. That's gonna fix the entire. And they're only 2 points out of the wild card. I mean, there's
that's it. Like, they've one good week and they're back in. And we should also point out that I think the other thing is Chris Letang is currently hurt, so it's not like the freeze is gonna lift and we're gonna get a blockbuster trade dropped on us. But I mean, it's interesting because the one, you know, and I'm going to kind of do that stereotypical Canadian media thing whenever a big player goes on the trade block, but you look at the Maple Leafs.
Of course you have to.
Who we've heard for years, right? Need that number one all-purpose defenseman, that Norris caliber guy. Letang even shoots right, and if you follow Mike Babcock, you know that like he's adamant about having the right mix of right left guys. So in theory, the Leafs don't just need a number one defenseman; they need a number one right-handed defenseman. They certainly have lots of forward depth that they could move. They've got so many forwards that they've got, you know, the guys like Kasperi Kapanen, who's not even playing because he can't crack the lineup. That's all clogged up with top nine forwards.
So is what you're saying
it
is
could
the
be a fit
Letang for Marner? Is that what you're saying right now on this podcast? Are you breaking the news? Is that
I gotta check. Marner had briefly replaced Nylander as the guy who was in every trade rumor, but I feel like Marner had a couple of good games before the deadline, so it might be. Might be back to
He scored like five goals against stupid Scott Darling, who continues to make me look bad with every appearance. We're at a point now where I'm sitting there going, like, I see the score of the game and it's like Carolina 3, whoever won in the third period. And I'm like, oh, I guess Cam Ward started. Like, that's where I'm at now, where I just know when Scott Darling doesn't play. It's so depressing.
That's a bad place where,
God,
where you're just assuming that Cam Ward is the guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, what happens if you're the Leafs? Is this, you know, that one of the kind of ongoing subplots for at least the last few years has been like, what do you do with James Van Riemsdyk, who is a free agent at the end of this year?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, that seems like the sort of guy that the Penguins would, you know, a clear cut top six guy.
Hainsey and Van Riemsdyk, huh?
That Hainsey kid, I feel like he could fit in.
He's a former Penguin legend. Oh man, I'm starting to come around because I still think the Penguins need a guy. I don't think they have a guy who's like a healthy scratch when Letang is playing that can just jump in once they make the trade. They traded Dumoulin. They need something back.
They do need somebody back. I don't know. Mike Babcock loves his veteran guys, so I feel like Hainsey's fallen into that that category where they would do something. Stupid move a younger guy to say. But, you know, and these two teams hooked up on the Kessel trade. So there's clearly some, you know, the lines of communication are already there. So, you know, and again, like I, as a Leafs fan, I hear that. I hear Chris Letang's available. I go, oh, we could get Chris Letang. And then I just immediately start talking myself out of it.
Why?
You look at like,
why?
Because, well, I mean, because of the health history, the fact he's 30, you know, what if his play drops off? What if it, you know, you're on the hook for, you know, big cap hit. And we all know the Leafs got, you know, that 1 or 2 year window where before Matthews and everyone get their extensions and then it goes, you know, then your cap gets really tight. But
what would you rather have, Letang now, or would you rather wait a year and make a push for Drew Doughty for probably way more money than $7 million though? Like what, if the theory is that you have to get the number one defenseman, do you do this or do you wait and pay a little more? For an older guy,
yeah,
or
that's same it. Age. For a guy that you know, and you know, let's assume that, you know, Chris Letang has a clean bill of health as far as the major stuff. I mean, some of the stuff with him. I mean, he had a stroke. I don't even know how that figures into your future, you know, your future health. If there's a risk of going down that road again, but. You know, if you can center a deal around James Van Riemsdyk, who's already going to be leaving at the end of this year, presumably as a free agent or re-signing for a contract that's going to be most of what Letang already makes, you know, it would take more than that to get the deal done. I don't know.
Talking yourself into it,
right? Because you do that, then you get to either... You either get to pair them up with one of Riley or Gardner or bump those guys down. And then, you know, because like Morgan Riley's having a really good season. I feel like there's this kind of undercurrent among Leaf fans where whenever you talk about the need for that number one Norris caliber guy that says, like, maybe they already have that. Not that Riley or Gardner are going to win a Norris, but that, you know, they already have a clear number one, maybe even a couple guys who could fill that role. But then... Like,
yeah,
you know, especially Jake Gardner goes out and has one of his Jake Gardner games, and you go, oh, right, okay, that's not
like my thing has always been they don't need the number one, they need like they just need better defensemen overall. Like, they're just still
that's
so
the thing. I mean, yeah, how many if the Leafs went out and got Chris Letang, and let's assume they don't, you know, they don't move Riley or Gardner in the deal, how many teams have a better top three defenseman than Letang, Riley, Gardner? Like, that's definitely a top three you can contend.
The bottom three is the issue when you have Roman Polak out there running around and taking penalties.
Even the bottom three, I mean, you know, I don't know. I think we already, if Hainsey's in the deal, then okay. But if not, you've got Hainsey, you got, you know, Carrick's still okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, Polak's another one of those guys that Babcock kind of he seems to kind of fall in and out of love with that guy, and because he wasn't in the lineup for a little while. But
and plus,
you know, then you go and add a guy at the trade deadline, go spend a third round pick on somebody to come in and be your number six.
People forget that this was supposed to be like last year the Leafs were ahead of schedule. They weren't supposed to be a playoff team that could push the Caps into a tough playoff series. They were supposed to be their pain. What happened to the pain? Like right now the Leafs are better than they were last year for sure, but I don't think there should be pressure to have to do something huge or splashy. Maybe next year, but now, I mean,
no. But see, the thing with the Leafs, you're right. Like the as far as the, you know, when the window opens, like
it's kind of open
the
now.
Case that the window is like is opening now, but it doesn't. You know, it's going to be open for a long time. The thing with the Leafs, though, has always been the cap, right? Like they made that Dion Phaneuf trade with the Senators. which I still can't believe they pulled off. They structured it so that as of this season, like all the salary they took on was gone. Like they took a bunch of bad contracts from the Senators, but they're all gone. And so now they've got this year and they've got next year before the extensions kick in. Like they need Nylander needs an extension for next season, but Marner and Matthews don't get theirs until the year after. So the thinking suddenly was, wait, even if, you know, the young core is not as good as it's going to be right now, you've got an opportunity now salary wise to add some things and really take a run at this early. But I don't know, Letang doesn't necessarily fit that, because ideally you'd be talking about bringing in somebody on a big contract that had 2 years left, and then you could walk away from if you needed the space.
So maybe trade for Ekman-Larsson. Maybe that's the play. I love how we've turned this Letang discussion into Sean's Maple Leaf Stanley Cup fantasy hour. This is great.
Yeah. Don't forget though, the Coyotes say that they will never trade Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and they've said that for a lot of years.
Yeah.
And they've not only my all-time favorite, because I mean we've talked about teams that like just declare guys untouchable and just slam the door on a trip before it even gets off the ground. My favorite though was with the Coyotes 2 years ago when they didn't even have a GM, right? Like they were between general managers, and the owner was asked about some rumor that probably originated out of Canada, probably originated out of Toronto, that would the Coyotes trade Ekman-Larsson in a deal for the number one overall pick that the Leafs had just won in the lottery, which of course was going to be Austin Matthews, only Arizona hockey star that has ever or will ever come into the NHL. And the Coyotes owner, not only did he shoot the deal down, but he was like adamant that it was the dumbest idea he had ever heard. And he was like, we would never trade Ekman-Larsson. We would never, do anything like that. And whoever's up there in Canada, whatever they're smoking, whatever they're dying, I need to get some of that because they're crazy. And you look back like 2 years later, you're like, yeah, guys, was that the right track? Like, are you?
That was stupid back then. Yeah. Never mind now. Like that was a stupid thing that I would never trade Ekman-Larsson. Like,
really? Austin Matthews wouldn't be okay in Arizona right now? Like you're glad you slammed the door. And like to be clear, the Leafs weren't gonna make that trade.
Yeah,
the Leafs
of course
like
not.
It's not, but yeah, it's just, you know, like yeah, really that wasn't a road you even wanted to go down. The one and only superstar, that local kid that you're ever gonna have an opportunity to market. I mean, I know they're already beating the doors down to sell tickets in Arizona already, but
I mean, they can't fit any more people in the building at this point, so they may as well just make that move. Yeah. It's a fire hazard to get Austin Matthews. They'd be like, people would be climbing up the side of the building, there'd be injuries. You just, you know, it's hockey fever in Glendale, Phoenix, wherever they are.
Exactly. Who am I to tell Coyotes ownership what to do? They clearly have a handle on all this stuff, but yeah, that just time and you know, I didn't say anything because I didn't know that Austin Matthews was going to be good yet. But now that, in hindsight, I can spike the football retroactively for not agreeing to the made up fake trade that got floated by the Canadian media.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a little short break here for a mid-show ad.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we're back. Biscuits, Colin, a hockey podcast. Zach Rinaldo.
Yeah.
you kind of forgot he was in the NHL because he's not an NHL player, but then you remember he's not really on an NHL team. And then before the break, he did the most Christmassy holiday spirit thing you can do. He checked Nathan MacKinnon at center ice, totally legal hit, good hit, solid hit. And then new Colorado defenseman, Samuel Girard, not to be confused with the Sam Girard of The Fugitive, who tracked down Richard Kimball and proved his innocence. We're talking about the young defenseman, skated over to perhaps confront Zach Rinaldo because that happens after clean hits in the NHL. But before anything could really happen, Zach Rinaldo dropped his gloves and absolutely dummied him with one punch. And now, as of the time we're doing this, he is facing a what would have been an in-person hearing, but I'm pretty sure Zach Rinaldo is not allowed on commercial flights, so he could possibly come to New York. He's on a no-fly list. So I saw like a lot of people were pretty convinced Zach Rinaldo's a scumbag and all that sort of stuff, and I kind of lean that way too. But Paul Bissonnette, who is the Coyotes radio guy, former player, not averse to punching people in the face, was making the case that once Girard skated over to him, it was all fair game. But, and I understand the argument that, like, if after a hit, if a guy comes over to you, chances are that guy wants to stick up for his teammate and all that sort of stuff. But I watched the video so many times, and it just looks like Sam Girard isn't even looking at Zach Rinaldo. People said, like, he went over there, realized it was Rinaldo, and then, you know, chickened out or turned away. I think he knew it was Rinaldo the whole time. But sometimes when guys go over to guys after hits like that, they're not looking to fight every single time. It's not a guaranteed, like, ding, ding, let's go. And, you know, Rinaldo just, he seemed like a guy that was just super afraid of getting hit and just wanted to get the first punch in immediately. And he hit a guy in the face that wasn't looking. That's my two cents, Sean.
Yeah. And like, I get the Bissonnette defense, that it may be, depending on what angle you're looking at, it maybe looks like he's skating over to confront him. It also maybe looks like he's just kind of following the play and trying to go around him. I get why Zach Rinaldo might just assume that he's coming after him, because again, this is the NHL these days. Every hit, clean or otherwise, has to draw somebody in. But even if you take the most charitable view of it and you say that he thought Girard was coming to fight him, like, dude, you're Zach Rinaldo. You've been in dozens of fights in your career. This is Sam Girard coming towards you. Even if he's coming to fight you, let the kid get his gloves off. Like, you just hit their guy. If someone else is coming to do the so-called honorable thing and honor the code by sticking up for his teammate, honor the code back by at least letting the kid get his gloves off before you pummel him, which we all know would be the result of that fight,
right?
10 times out of 10.
Right.
You don't need to start throwing sucker punches before the kid can even get his gloves off. You know, if anything, you know, the code would usually dictate that if it's a total mismatch like that, that, you know, you maybe go easy on, maybe land a couple and, you know, wrestle them down to the ice and say, okay, you know, good try, and head off to the penalty box. You don't just dummy the guy before he's even
he's not even squared off with him. He didn't him and then like stare him down and like, you know, whatever. Yeah. He didn't jump him. He didn't do anything. He just skated past him.
Yeah. If you're KOing a guy who still has his gloves on in the NHL, you've screwed up. Unless it was like it would have to be a really weird set of circumstances. And then, you know, on top of that, the fact that this is Zach Rinaldo, this is a guy who's got, you know, he's got a long, you know, a long track record of suspensions, more games missed due to suspension than points that he's ever scored in the NHL. He's exactly the kind of player, unfortunately for him, that if the NHL was looking to send a message and, you know, if they were looking for an easy case where you can come down hard on a guy, like, this is it. It's presented right in front of them. And like you said, they're doing the hearing maybe even right now as we're recording this. Probably by the time people hear this, we'll have heard what the suspension is. But it's, you know, presumably going to be a big one, at least 5 games, because they offered him an in-person hearing, and more likely double digits.
It's just, you know what? I've put so much faith in John Chayka's ability to build a team. And when he went out and got Zach Rinaldo, I just assumed he saw something in the analytics that showed he could be a top nine player on that team. And to just have my heart broken again by a guy who has not improved the team one iota since he's gotten there.
I see that more as you're John Chayka. You're the kind of new age analytics guy, or at least that's how you've been presented. You got the old school people, probably some still in the organization, and this is the bone that you throw them. Like, all right, I'm going to go get a, I don't even know if you say enforcer anymore, but somebody who kind of fits that mold. There's your old school player, and this is what you get as a result. What do you think? What's your prediction on the suspension?
I don't know. Like, I could like Biz kind of laid out Ronaldo's defense on the phone call, and I'm trying to imagine what that defense would do in that room with Paros and those guys. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna guess what the NHL will do is give him 8 games. I think it should be more, but I'm trying to guess what they're going to do. I think it'll be 8 because I don't know. 10.
I think it's going to be more. I think it's going to be, I'll say 12.
Yeah.
I'll say 12. And then if they come down 10, we'll both get to be right.
Well, but technically I win because you went over. I just want to point out that I win. We're always doing the prices right. What other rules would we use?
And I say 9. I revise my 8.1 games,
and it's gonna be 6, and we're both gonna lose, and none of us are gonna get the showcase.
Blah, 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 blah.
I don't know. Like, what was the last thing he was suspended for? Like, what was the last time he got a thing? I should have looked this up before we started doing it.
It was a few years because he wasn't even in the league last year. He had like a check to the head was his last one, and he got like 5 games.
So technically he's not a repeat offender in their eyes, right? That's how it works.
Well, but you got to remember, like, the way it works is repeat offender,
like, it counts, but it doesn't.
Only it a repeat offender, you know, is defined by the CBA, where it's like, I think 18 months. That only applies to how they handle the fines, like whether you miss only the game checks or whether you miss the days in between and that. As far as how they judge him, they're allowed to consider his whole history. Like, they don't have to go in and pretend that they don't know that he's been suspended a bunch of times. They're allowed to do that. It just, he won't be considered a repeat offender by the letter of the CBA if he doesn't fall within the 18 months, but they're still allowed to say, dude, you've been down this road before, and we've seen you here before. I don't think it's going to be like a Rafi Torres situation, which some people seem to think this is going to be one of these, like, just, you know, suspend him the rest of the season, send the really big message. Like, Rafi Torres, Matt Cook, those guys were kind of at a different level as far as how often, and with Torres, at least it was the same thing over and over again. Like, it was the same type of hit, and they eventually just, you know, for all intents and purposes, basically kicked him out of the league. And I don't think Ronaldo's at that stage, but, you know, I think whether it's a good or a bad thing, we all know that when you see a star player do something in this league that might normally warrant a suspension, a lot of times it doesn't come down that way, or it comes down being less than you would think because they're a star, and it's hard to suspend a star player. It's not hard to defend or to suspend Zach Ronaldo. Like, there's even the Coyotes, I don't think if they're right, being honest, would really defend him all. I mean, go ahead, you know, put him out for 20 games. That's not gonna, you know, it's not gonna cost them a single point in the standings, and it might actually help them. So I think this is the flip side of that, where when a fourth liner comes along and you've got a Department of Player Safety that is very often criticized for not being harsh enough, this is an opportunity for them to really, you know, score some points and send a message. And I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think they're going to go completely over the top on it and just throw this guy to the wolves and, you know, so that they get some good PR. I'm not suggesting that, but I think in terms of benefit of the doubt, he's going to get little, if any, from this group. And I think it'll be, I'm going to say double digits.
I just think Gerard's not seriously hurt, right? So they'll use that. Yep. They'll use that. Plus,
that is part of it.
And plus, like, I feel like when player safety has like the Radko Gudas thing, where he's clearly trying to decapitate Matthew Perreault, and they side with the whole, well, he was just trying to bring his stick down on top of his stick, and it just blah, blah. Like, I feel like the player safety looks for ways out of suspending guys for longer than they should. And I feel like that that Biz defense that I completely disagree with, I could see them clinging to that and just giving him, even though it's Zach Rinaldo, and giving him fewer games. But
that'll be the question, especially Perreault, like having been in that situation before. I do wonder though if there's going to be a point in that hearing, you know, either officially or unofficially, where Perreault is like, dude, I fought 100 times in this league. I never sucker punched a guy who had his gloves still on.
Or he might say, as a fighter, I understand the instinct when someone comes over to you after a hit like that. So I'm gonna
I think you can understand the instinct, but it's also like, you know, dude, I had that instinct every time I saw someone coming at me. I never once dropped my gloves and caved in a guy's head before he even had a chance to protect himself.
I hope it's 10. So, I hope it's 10. I'm going to guess 8. 8's my final guess.
All right. I'll stick with my 12, and I'll even under Price is Right rules, I still feel like I could come out okay.
All right. What do we got left here? We got like about 20 minutes left.
We do have a lot of good reader questions, so we'll get to those, but we should probably, you know what, we can kind of combine two topics, which is the World Juniors have started.
Yay.
And you've also got the Winter Classic on Monday. And the overlap between them is that there's actually an outdoor game as part of the World Juniors.
Is there?
This weekend.
Really?
There is. On Friday, USA, Team USA and Team Canada are playing outdoors in Buffalo.
That's cool.
And I got to be honest, I'm looking forward to that outdoor game more than I'm looking forward to Monday's game, which also features Buffalo in the Sabres against the Rangers. And to give you an idea how excited I am for this outdoor game, up until a few weeks ago, I thought this game was in Buffalo.
What? Wait, the Ranger game?
Yeah.
Like the Rangers are ever going to play an outdoor game? That's not. Well, I guess they.
In my defense, the Buffalo Sabres are the home team.
I know.
In this game, because of the whole Madison Square Garden's lease technicality, where the Rangers can play outdoor games in New York, but they always have to be technically listed.
Devils and Islanders games were both the same exact way. They were played at
Yankee Stadium, but the Rangers are the away team. So I don't know. I wonder, is it a thing that they always have to play like other New York State teams? Like, are they just going inching further and further away? Are we going to get to a point where it's like Rangers against Kings?
And it's the Kings home team.
Like, yeah. but we've got, I don't know, like, I don't know if it's outdoor game fatigue. I don't know if it's the fact that the Sabres are just not good this year, or if it's the fact that the Rangers are only marginally good. But I can't remember a Winter Classic where I had this little excitement for it.
I live here, and I completely forgot until yesterday, until someone in the Rangers PR department sends out like emails about Rangers schedule for the week, you know, upcoming game previews, and they sent out a Winter Classic schedule of events when all the stuff's going to happen. And I was like, oh, right, the outdoor game. I forgot about that. I didn't really realize. And like one of the first things is like a photo op with like an NHL content vice president or something. It's like, yeah, that's what I want to go to. Queens for.
I love those lists. I love how there's always somebody planting a tree somewhere too. There's always like Jack Michael come and like pick up a shovel and pose for a photo where they plant a tree as some sort of green
symbolic
initiative.
Oh yeah, the green initiative.
I mean, and it'll be interesting to see how it does ratings wise. I mean, it'll do great in Buffalo. Buffalo is still one of the best TV markets in the States. I know people think of Buffalo as like a smaller market, and in terms of population it is, but TV wise, like that's why the Sabres, even when they're bad, are always on NBC and because they're pretty much guaranteed to do good ratings. But part of me, it just feels like, and I know they plan these things out in advance, but it's too soon to put the Sabres back in the spotlight. I feel like if they had waited another year or two, they would have had the potential to do a bigger, like, I mean, a Leafs Sabres outdoor game in Buffalo would be amazing, because Leaf fans would flood the border like they did in Detroit. And that rivalry in a couple years when both teams are good is going to be phenomenal, because the two fan bases hate it. Like, it's a great underrated rivalry. And you know, if you wait a couple years, but I don't know, maybe we've been waiting a couple years in the Sabres so long, maybe they should figure they need to pull the trigger now. But I don't know. I don't sense a ton of buzz on this one. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. I remember people were saying that about the Caps Blackhawks one, and I didn't get it. And then the ratings were the lowest ratings of any Winter Classic ever. But yeah. here are the bowl games that the Winter Classic's up against. Monday, January 1st at noon, you have unranked Michigan playing South Carolina. 12:30, the Outback Bowl. Or no, that was the Outback Bowl. This is the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. You have undefeated 12th-ranked Central Florida against 7th-ranked Auburn, the team that may have been screwed out of the I guess maybe Ohio State was screwed more, but whatever, who cares? And then at 1 o'clock, like, here's the issue for me. At 1 o'clock, it's Notre Dame versus LSU. And the Rangers have gotten better since the start of the season, so it's not as though it's these two bum teams playing. The Rangers are playing pretty good the last month plus, 2 months probably. But there are people who live here. They're all white dudes. They all have the last name of like McCormick or Riley. They didn't go to Notre Dame, but they love the crap out of Notre Dame, Sean. And mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to take precedence with those people in their homes with their TVs. Is the guy who likes to pretend he went to Notre Dame watching the Notre Dame bowl game at 1 o'clock, or a crummy Rangers Sabres game, which is probably going to go to intermission right when the Notre Dame game is starting? I wonder mm-hmm. how that's going to work, but.
The other thing is, like, this is the Winter Classic, right? This is supposed to be the one time that the NHL isn't just worried about local ratings. Like, they always put out these press releases, hey, record ratings. And then you're like, really? And then you look and it's like, yeah, in Nashville, we had the record ratings. Well, yeah, because the Nashville Predators are in the final. But this is supposed to be your one chance to, like, put your best foot forward in front of a national audience. And I mean, I can't sit here and complain that they do the same three or four teams every year and then, I guess, hit them too hard for taking a chance that the Sabres would be in a better spot and be a little bit more marketable. And obviously, you know, Jack Eichel, the American star, is a guy that you should be starting to make a marketing push around. But it's just,
I thought they would be good this year. I can see where they thought the Sabres might take a step forward this year and it was worth the risk. I didn't think they'd be this bad, so I can't kill the NHL mm-hmm. for that. But the World Juniors, is it still U.S. Canada? I don't know if it's still. Is that even the thing? Is that like are they the two? I watched for like 2 seconds yesterday, and like the United States was just pulling apart Denmark like they were turkey bones. It was like 4-0, 10 minutes in. I don't know how anybody watches the tournament. I don't get it.
That's the thing, right? It's like there's six good teams that could conceivably win, and even that's kind of maybe stretching it. And then the tournament's bigger than that, so you always start off with like. The teams get a few quote unquote easy games and
great
and
Danes, then, more like bad Danes.
Yeah. So US and Canada are probably the co-favorites, but there's Russia could win. Sweden could win. So it's a tournament that's definitely, you know, more suspense around who's going to win than the Olympics or the World Cup. These days where Canada doesn't dominate to quite the same extent. And the fact that the game's in Buffalo, they're obviously like this, there's been some concern. There's not like the attendance hasn't been great so far, especially for the Canadian games. I think they were hoping more Canadians would come down and to watch those games. But I think maybe if it even is a problem is the outdoor game has gotten so much attention that if you're going to go down for a game, that's the one you're going to make sure you get to go see. So yeah. Anyways, I'm more excited for the Friday World Junior out there, 'cause they've never done anything remotely like this. And you know, it's a game that actually counts in the standings, and it's USA and Canada. So it basically decides who wins the group and who gets the easier path, and they can still play in the gold medal game down the road. But it's a big, meaningful game. I mean, it's probably a more meaningful game than Sabres and Rangers is. So I'm more interested in seeing that one.
Do you want me to like become super hardcore into the WJC just so we can have arguments on the podcast that people will like talk about and tweet about? Like, I'll be super pro US. I'll be like, Canada sucks. I love Riley Ouellette. He's awesome.
Or yeah,
something.
We should do it. We'll do that but this time next week, I'll know whether this is one of the years where Canada's good or not, because that determines how much all Canadians care about the tournament. So yeah, we'll check back by next week. We'll be able to know whether we need to argue too much and whether I need to come prepared with a list of eligible Canadian players who are currently in the NHL that would clearly be on the team, and we would clearly be winning the gold medal if it wasn't for
if Skyler and Riley and Wake weren't hurt, Canada would have won. Yeah. They got hurt in their WHL games.
We had all of our best Kales. We would be. I think we've got a defense pairing that's like both guys are named Kale, but it's spelled differently. So that's very Canadian hockey right there.
Wait, it's A-L-E and what's the other one? A-I-L.
I think one's a C and one's a K.
Oh my God. Yeah. Dave and Sean, like, see, I bring this up once in a while, but like Dave and Sean are like Jebediah to like young people back when, you know what I mean? Like we have the old people names now. Like, no one's named Dave anymore. I have like the most biblical common name ever, and no one under the age of 40 has my name anymore. God.
That's Kale. Right. You gotta make way for the Cadens and the Jadens and Aidens.
This is my daughter Hayden, my son Caden, my other son Jaden.
My other son Jaden, spelled differently than the other Jaden. If you're Canadian, like if you're from especially Western Canada, you can hear that difference and you'd be like, oh no, I got it. Jaden with a soft G. No, I heard.
All right, you wanna do the reader question, see if we got any Jadens in here? Any Cadens?
Yeah, let's see if anyone we just accidentally insulted.
This question is from Jaden. Let's see. What? There was a good question about Gary Bettman. I think someone deleted it. I always prepare these, and then people delete when I go back to the Biscuits account. I'm like, where's that good question? And then they delete it.
What was it? Because there's a couple here.
I have one from Gary Bettman. Bearded Wilson, who goes by Man in the Beard. This guy is very much committed to the beard. He wants people to know he's got a beard. But his question's good. If all pro hockey were to adopt one set of rules, which would you prefer, NHL or international? I like international. I think if we're assuming,
is there like one completely standard set of international rules? Like,
well, I mean, it's,
I feel if, like there's some,
if it's like Olympic,
so what
rules,
do you get? So you get wider rinks,
no trapezoid, 3-2-1 point system.
No trapezoid.
I know the studies say that wider rink doesn't necessarily lead to more scoring, but
it doesn't like European people look at the Olympics and they're like, look at all the extra space. Yeah. Watch regular European pro hockey. It's if anything, it's even worse. The defense is terrible. So that wouldn't help. But yeah, the one problem, if we're actually doing international rules, we're going to get shootouts in the playoffs. So to me, that's a non-starter. You got to go NHL. Just I'll take 100 trapezoids over shootout in the playoffs. But it's not 100 trapezoids. 100 trapezoids would be too many.
There's nobody touching the puck in certain zones.
Yeah, he's got to triangulate every single. Wait a second.
Jimmy, you're a forward. Come back here and touch the puck. I can't do it. No. Technically,
right shooting defenseman can touch it, but not.
All right, so I guess, yeah, maybe you're. Well, if the shootout. All right, if you get rid of that, because if the shootout's only for the championship game, right? Like if it's a best of three and you go to overtime two.
You never know. That's the weird. Every international tournament, like it goes to, and then you got to just wait and find out, like, are they going to keep playing hockey? You got to, like, there's that moment at the end of the third period where you watch the players to see if they're leaving. Because if they're leaving, that means you get 20 minutes of overtime. And if they're sticking around, it means you get a shorter overtime or right to the shootout. And, but yeah, they have shootouts in playoff games, and that's a no go.
Okay, this question has basically been asked by like three people in various ways, so I'll just throw it out there and not really credit it to anybody. Does Ken Holland suck? Should he be fired? And should the Red Wings trade Peter Mrazek for a pick to get the people really, you know, what's in on my other podcast that, you know, I know you love to talk about. No one asks us anything about Ken Holland. Like, this is the Ken Holland hate podcast. And I think this is his last year.
So much Senator stuff. And then today we did so much Sabre stuff. People just assume that we're like the podcast of crappy Atlantic Division teams. So Detroit fans are like, I'm in. I've found my people.
There's no Lightning talk on this pod. No, never, never.
Why would we do that?
Why would we waste your time?
Somebody sent in a question where they said, Vanoid.
Vanoid, yeah, Vanoid.
Oh, Vanoid 69420. Is this you, Dave?
Is that you? He has a Simpsons avatar. That's the one thing that shows it's not me.
Okay. All right. He says, if you're the Red Wings, if you get a trade offer right now, Mrazek for a 2018 second round draft pick, do you do it now or wait to the deadline? You do that immediately. Mm-hmm. You can get a second round pick for a goalie that you don't even really seem to want, who's not presumably going to be part of your plans going forward. Yeah, you definitely take that. As far as Ken Holland, I think what you do is you wait till the end of the year and you kick Ken Holland upstairs. You do what the Flyers did with Holmgren, what the Devils tried to do with Lamoriello and did for a little while. Like, you just go to him and say, Ken, we need some new blood. Please accept this role as president of hockey operations and, you know, with lots of money and all that sort of thing. But we're going to bring someone else in and hand over the reins. I don't think I don't think you want to keep Ken Holland running the show, but I do think after 20 years and multiple Stanley Cups, you don't want to be in a situation where you have to fire a guy and, you know, have him leave on those terms.
Jason Brown and his big hat and his avatar wants to know, if either of you were commissioner for a day but could only make one rule change, what would it be? And the rule change can't be bar Gary Bettman from the NHL.
Yes. My rule change can't be that I wish for more rule changes.
My wish is $1 billion of the $4 billion Gary Bettman talks about, and then I can leave.
Yes,
that's it.
That'd be nice. Give me the money. I mean, this, my rule change is you fix the standings. I think I would do that even before I would make the Nets bigger. That would be my second thing.
Yeah,
but I would fix this. Like, it, the standings are so stupid and so indefensible right now, and have such a crappy impact on how games are played, especially down the stretch when you should be putting your most exciting product on the table. I would fix the standings. And I know there's people out there going, yeah, but parity, fixing the standings would have no impact on parity whatsoever. Getting rid of the loser point, going 3-2-1 or whatever you want to do would have no impact at all on the actual parity. The parity is caused by the salary cap. It's not caused by the standings. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Preach. Brian Burke is lying to you when he says teams are going to be out of the playoffs by December. Fans are smart enough to understand that if you went to a 3-2-1 system, that, you know, if you were, you know, now you're going to be 9 points back instead of 6 points back. Like, people aren't going to go, oh, 9 points, well, we're definitely out. And
I'm not going to the games. That, I'm not going to pay for tickets anymore. They'll still go.
So fix the standings, number one. Then make the Nets bigger, number two, if I get a second option. And then from there.
And I'll close it out by saying, get rid of offside. I hate offside. There's too many whistles altogether. You can drift back, and you could set up a screen on the goaltender on a slap shot from inside your own zone if you wanted to. It's not so much for the free flowing portion of the game. It's just, there are too many whistles, man. There's too many stoppages during the course of a game that needs to have flow and needs to have rhythm. It's just too much, man.
See, the only thing I would miss about offsides is, like, I'm like, my old school hockey brain, whenever someone suggests that, like, I immediately go, no, we need offsides. And then I can't really think of reasons why.
It's just been there forever. That's all it is.
My only thing is, what I would miss is not the offsides on the way in, but I like the idea of the team trying to clear the puck out. You know, the idea that if they can get it out over the blue line, then you got to circle back. So I wonder if there's some way that you can do no offsides on the entry, but then once the puck comes out, you've got to clear, and then you can come back in once you've cleared without waiting for the puck. But I just, you know, the guy blocking a shot and then diving to knock the puck out over the blue line, so that, you know, like, I like that element of it. I could do certainly without the skate being a millimeter in the air on the way in.
Like, it's just like the, like that, like it's one of those things the NHL does where they have like this could be a thing they do because they have the shootout. Everybody hates the shootout. Do they get rid of the shootout? No, they just give you 3-on-3 instead. But you want to just get rid of the shootout then? No. We gotta do. All right, fine. We'll leave the stupid thing there. Maybe these offside reviews will open the NHL's eyes to the premise that offside is pointless and dumb, and we can get rid of it. And if we get rid of offside, we can get rid of offside reviews, and that's less. That's more things that aren't going to be slowed down. I just hate stoppages in the games. I just hate it. It drives me insane. But like, there's nothing worse than when you're at a game and you see a guy getting ready to crank up a shot, and you know the defenseman's going to put his stick in the lane and the puck's going to go in the netting, and you just immediately look down at your computer and you're like, here's another 30 seconds to wait around for a line change and all this stuff. It's just, there needs to be less of that. So one, offside; two, play the puck off the netting, and then this way your whistles are icing, puck in the bench, puck out of play where the netting isn't there, and, you know, covering the puck. Just
speed,
keep the game going.
Speed it along.
Yeah.
You know, another rule that somebody I heard suggest once that has kind of grown on me over time, because it sounds bizarre when you first say it, but somebody once suggested no line changes in between whistles. All line changes only on the fly. So, you know, you goalie makes the save, great, get the puck and let's go. Like, we don't stand around with guys going off and on. You got to make your changes. And if you did that, you'd probably have to go to like three timeouts, and, you know, it, for situations where the players were exhausted and you'd have to do something. But for the most part, you just, you know, keep the game going, man. Like, obviously you'd have commercial breaks still, but, you know, rather than the referee standing there with his hand up while guys make their way on and off, just keep playing, just keep going.
That's interesting.
See, you had the same reaction I did, right? At first you're like, what? And then it's like,
oh, well, no, when you first said it, I had it backwards in my mind where it was the other way around. And I'm just like, wait, I was like, how do they get off the, wait, no, that doesn't make, oh,
see, that'd be fun. You just got to, like, you know, that would be your red zone moment for, you know, we have a 12-minute shift going on in
Drew Doughty is vomiting at center ice. He has skated for 7 straight minutes and he's
Mark
not getting down.
I was making a move for the puck. He is going to attempt. No, he's down. He's down again.
And the goalies are just standing there, like, "What do you guys? I do this for 60 minutes every night. Why are you guys all tired? Come on, seriously. Get up." All right. Well, I believe we have run our course for this episode, whatever number it is. We'll say 41. I'm going to guess 41 and hope that's right at the end. Thanks for the reading. Thanks for the listening. Hit us up at Vice Biscuits if you want to interact. If you want to ask us some questions, go to the iTunes, rate us really highly. And read our stuff. Me and Sean have done a best of 2017 that will definitely be up by the time you hear this. It's got some.
It's gonna be on Vice Sports. We picked the, what did we do? 20 best and worst.
Well, 10 and 10 action.
Yeah.
Oh, did we sign our names to each thing? I just realized that when I sent.
I did. I put your name on
thanks.
Things.
Sorry to give you that stupid work to do. I just realized it as we were talking right now. I'm like, wait, how does anyone get to know if I'm making the joke or if you? So yeah, check that out, and we'll be back next week after the New Year. So go out, get drunk, don't drive home, have a good time, and I guess we'll see you then.
Yeah, enjoy the Winter Classic, and we'll be back next week.
Go USA.
Go Canada.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.